For nature.
For the ocean.
For people.
For animals.
Hey, beautiful Science Planet community. Today we have again an English-speaking guest in our podcast, Justine Rist. And maybe you can hear already Justine. In our language, we would say Justine in English, but Justine, I think in my language, in German, it does not really exist in this way, but you can hear maybe it's a French name. So welcome, Justine. So amazing that you're here.
Hi, Maggie. Hey. I think the name in German, I met a Justina here.
Okay, Justina. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Mm. Nice. Okay, cool. Good to know. Well, what is Justine doing and what she's here for today to tell you about and to tell us all about is mainly one of my most loved hobbies. It's about food. I love to eat. I love to cook. And Justine does the same. And Justine is a vegan chef, which is amazing. I was eating her food already and I can tell you, yes, this is great, amazing food. So listen a little bit what she has to tell us today about. But just shortly let you know why I know Justine. I met her just recently, but I know Justine through our work as activists, because Justine is activist too for Sea Shepherd. She wears the Sea Shepherd hoodie right now as well. And she has done some campaigns for Sea Shepherd, yay. And she will explain us a little bit about what she has done there, what she has seen there, and what she experienced. And mainly we will talk about the activism part and the vegan cooking part and how you came to do what you do. You will explain us all very soon. Hey, it's really, really cool that you take your time, because you have right now a little bit of time between your work. So you even took this free time off for us to share your story. Thank you so much.
Thanks for inviting. I'm so happy to be here. So thanks, Maggie.
Really, really amazing. I'm very happy to see you. And can you tell us a little bit, first of all, who you are, what you have done before you became an activist? What was your work? What was the stuff you have been doing before?
Well, I'll try to keep it short.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there are many, many things you have done.
Yeah, I think what I can say is I've always been passionate about cooking. Since I'm a child. I remember in the Wednesday afternoon in France, the Wednesday is normally no school. And so I would watch the TV cooking shows by a very famous chef in France. What's his name now? I forgot, Joël Robuchon. Okay. And I would watch not vegan at all, just a heads up.
Normal.
I would, yeah, not at this time. I was not very sensitive about this before. Okay. But and so I would take notes and try to do it again myself. I think I have those memories of taking notes and trying to make the food I saw on TV. Mm. And I think I always liked food because that makes people happy, especially cakes. That makes people happy. So yeah, I had a normal upbringing, I guess. And I went to school. I wanted to become an actress. And then I decided to change. I thought, okay, I like to make cakes. And cakes make people happy. I will do that. I wanted to train as a pastry chef, but then it was complicated. And I had to train as a normal chef. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I trained for 2 years, then I did the 1 year of pastry, and then I decided to travel around the world. And so I went to live in Australia first, and there I think this is the moment I started being very much more open about things. And there was a lot of vegan cooking, or every time you would go to the restaurant, there was a vegan option. At the first, I have to say, I thought vegans, they were crazy people. I thought,
I thought so too.
Why? Why would you do that? Okay, I was like, okay, I understand vegetarian, but I thought, vegan, what?
So what's going on with these people, crazy?
I was like, this is too complicated, but yeah. And then, what can I say? I just suddenly I felt a bit awakened by the consumption society. That was the first step into the becoming more aware of what's going on in the world and stuff like that. And then I traveled a little bit in Southeast Asia, and I decided to go and stay 1 year in Japan, because you can also do the working holiday. So I did 1 year in Japan, and that's where I became vegetarian somehow. I think. And
funny in Japan, huh? It's really funny because I can't imagine that many people don't know that Japanese food is very much based on vegetarian food, like a lot of vegan food too, not just meat.
Yeah, I think there is a lot of meat. From what I remember, there is a lot of meat, and sometimes it was a bit complicated maybe to go to the restaurant because they use fish stock and meat stock everywhere in the soup and everything. So if you're really strict vegan or vegetarian, then it's a bit complicated. But the Zen Buddhist cuisine is vegan, but most people in Japan, they don't really care about this, really. Like, honestly, that's my experience, at least. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I became vegetarian and I told my coworkers, and they were like, what the hell? What happened to you?
They didn't understand what was going on.
They didn't understand what was going on. So, yeah. And Japan was a very, very... crazy experience. I mean, yeah, living in Japan, working there was an experience. It's too short now to talk about it. I won't talk about it too much, but yeah, I think I progressively became vegetarian. First, I stopped eating dairy, actually, and then I stopped eating meat and then fish. And when I stopped eating meat, I actually remember saying to myself, okay, I understand now vegan, you know, people, because they go to the end of the idea, like, okay, you don't want to harm animals, but if you eat eggs or dairy, then you harm them. So yeah. But I think my first thought was not for animals. First, I was stopping dairy for myself, and then I was aware of animals and I stopped meat. And
you answered already quite some questions I wanted to ask you, because first of all, the question of what was the main reason that you became first vegetarian, or in your case, it's the opposite. The most of the people are becoming vegetarian. I was doing that first. I was not stopping eating fish and animals in general. Fish was what opened my eyes with diving. And then I stopped eating animals. And then slowly, step by step, I became vegan. But that's how the most people I know became vegan. First, they became vegetarian. In your case, it's completely the opposite.
So I wasn't vegan. I was still eating eggs and sometimes dairy. I was not strict, but I really mostly didn't eat these animal products. Sorry, I interrupted.
No.
But it was a gradual thing. So I stopped dairy. Okay, 1 week later, I stopped eating meat. But then a few months later, I stopped the fish only.
Yeah.
And then, so that was in Japan. And then when I traveled again, I went to South America and Argentina, where they eat a lot of meat.
Yes,
and I started eating dairy a little bit more again. Mm-hmm. But then after that trip, I really wanted to become vegan. And when I came home, I was mostly vegan. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, okay, I would eat conte because I like it so much.
Yeah.
And then it was through meditation, actually, that I became fully vegan. Like in I think there is a switch. It's like, you know, you press the button and then suddenly you see
boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, I don't know but I think it's like suddenly the paradigm shift, I think you call it.
Yeah.
And suddenly, yeah. So I was at the meditation center in Switzerland. And it was really next to
Switzerland. That's funny too. Yeah. You have been in Southeast Asia, all over. You have been in Japan, and then you go to meditation in Switzerland. That's funny. I mean, it's beautiful. You can meditate everywhere, but Southeast Asia would be the first place. I would say yes, meditation place, right?
If you know Vipassana, meditation. You have center all around the world. I actually did some Vipassana in Japan. That was my first time. And then I did some in South America, so in Argentina and in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because I was living in France and there was no, it's complicated in Europe. There is not so many spots. It's very gets filled up very quickly. So I was meditating, and there is this metta meditation, so the love, universal love, you know, and then you're like, may all beings be happy, peaceful, and liberated. And then you hear the cow next door, or the cows, like screaming. And you kind of know what's happening there, but you don't really, you know, it's like, and so I was like, okay, I cannot say this and really mean it and still drink milk sometimes when I feel like it, you know, or eat cheese. I didn't drink milk, but So this is the moment everything changed in my mind. And I was like, okay, and now I'm vegan. And that's how it happened. So it took me 2 years, something like that, between Japan and Switzerland.
I think sometimes, like, I know many people who say they want to go more or vegan, or they want to change things in their life, but they many times think you have to become vegan from one day to the next to make a difference. But it's not like that. It's not happening. Like, it's very rare. It can happen, but the most of the people, we need steps, step by step. We are so much triggered by all these traditions and beliefs we have in our mind. So it's not so easy to just do it from one day to the next. And I think they're needed to get into it step by step sometimes, because so many things we just don't know. If we think about meat eating animals, maybe it's not a good thing for the animal, definitely, then you maybe stop eating that, or you say milk is not good for you, you don't feel good with eating any milk products, you stop eating this. But then step by step you learn about the other issues, and then you find out it's all so much connected, and then it brings you deeper and deeper, and at some point it's like, okay, this is all fucked up what we do here. Like, in the end, it's completely fucked up. We have to really change a lot. And then it makes this shift, right? And when you, like you say, when you made the meditation and hearing the cow screaming at the same time, this must be really the moment where you really feel like, okay, I'm a hypocrite if I'm saying everyone should be peaceful living and love for everyone and everything, blah, blah, blah. When you don't do the same thing to really create this love, you feel your own hypocrisy, I think it's called, coming out from your mouth, right? And that does not really make so much sense.
No, it doesn't. So that's the moment I kind of woke up. I was like, whoa, okay. I really want to change now. And and I remember, because there the food is vegetarian. Mm-hmm. But they still, actually, we got the milk from the farm next door and everything. And I was like, and I think I tried to sign petition against the fact that Vipassana should be vegan and stuff like this, because they say, you have principles, and one of the principles, no killing or no stealing.
Yeah.
And also having milk, you kill and steal.
It's weird, right? Because I know many people doing so much like spirituality work and so much connected to this world, and it's beautiful, but then not going deeper into this does not make so much sense to me. For me, it feels a little bit, when I talk to people and they're very spiritual and they even have so much good things to share, but then I find out they're not even thinking about veganism, then I really feel like, it doesn't make any sense to me. Like, I don't know. It's weird, right? But everyone has to find their own steps and their own.
It's a tough one. This one with the spirituality and things, you would think, okay, people are way awakened about so many things, but not this. It's a bit strange.
Yeah, it's a bit strange, right?
Yeah.
But we are not allowed to judge, but still it feels weird. Yeah. Hey, so in the end, you answered many questions already. I wanted to say, did you become vegan when you have been with Sea Shepherd? Because you have done some Sea Shepherd campaigns, but you obviously have been vegan before you went to Sea Shepherd, right? How did you go? How did you meet Sea Shepherd? How did you find out about Sea Shepherd?
So I was an activist in my town in Strasbourg. Mm-hmm. So we would do lots of action with the L 214 or 269 Life France and stuff like this, and we would do some events, and sometimes Sea Shepherd was there also. Mm-hmm. And so I met Sea Shepherd through, first I think it was a movie theater one time, and there was a kind of a speech about veganism and stuff given in the cinema. Mm-hmm. And Sea Shepherd was there. So that's the first time I got to know them.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I traveled in 2017, actually, I got to visit one of the, I think it was the Bob Barker, maybe, when I was back in Australia.
And for all that don't know this, Bob Barker is, yes, it's a person too, but he donated a ship to Sea Shepherd. So this the ship, yeah. It's called Bob Barker.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there was a big Sea Shepherd fair thingy to raise funds. Lots of different local activist groups and, you know, people selling things, and there was the boat, and you could visit it. They had tour, so we were really excited with my activist friends. We got to visit the ship, and
yeah, I was so excited. I was like,
"Wow, I want to go on the ship!" And then I talked to this guy. He's French, and he was showing us around. And then at some point, I asked him, "Hey, how do you get in, and how is it working?" Because I was traveling, I thought, "Okay, I have time. I can join." Uh-huh. And then he said, well, it took me 5 years to get on the boat. And I was like, holy crap.
That's too long.
I'm not going to wait around 5 years to get on the ship. Yeah. So, yeah. And later on, when I was in Nepal, I met with Nikki. So our common friend, Nikki, actually.
Nikki, so, I made a podcast too. So for everyone who's listening here, Nikki is a South African activist and she's vegan, a vegan chef as well. And she was on several Sea Shepherd campaigns. She was in prison with me on the Faroe Islands. So everyone who wants to hear her stories, listen to the podcast with Nikki Botha.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I love to listen to it. It was so nice. So yeah, and I met Nikki at a conference and we were cooking together. That was not the plan, but suddenly I was her sous chef, you know. And she was like, dude, you should go to Sea Shepherd. And I was like, oh, but this guy said to me 5 years. And I'm like, yes. Oh my God, I'm not waiting 5 years. So I sent my application anyway because she pushed me to do it. Because yeah, I wanted to experience also. And actually 2 weeks later I got they called me and they say, can you come in 3 days in Panama? I was like, dude, I just arrived in India. Crazy. So I said, I'm sorry, I can't be in Panama in 3 days or 2 days. It was too short and the money would be too much. And then they came back to me 1 week later, I think, and they asked me, okay, and in 15 days, can you be in Mexico? I said, okay, 15 days in Mexico, I can manage.
Yeah.
And so that's how I ended up in the, I think, the most intense campaign they have, which is
Explain us a little bit about.
Yeah, so the Milagro campaign, so it takes place in Mexico, in the Sea of Cortez, and in the Vin City of San Felipe, beautiful San Felipe.
It's beautiful. I have been there with the JPD. It's another ship of Sea Shepherd when we joined the Milagro campaign shortly. I was there. It's beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we should have, we almost crossed, I guess, when
I think so.
We were there at the same time, I think.
Mm. Yeah.
And so basically the Milagro campaign is a campaign to save the vaquita. So the vaquita is a small porpoise that is endemic to the Sea of Cortez. So you cannot find it anywhere else in the world. And to make it short, I don't know if it's so interesting, but I think it's interesting. So the in the Chinese medicine, they use the bladder, the floating bladder of a fish, and they fish the whole fish. There is no more fish of this species because they erased it from the map. And so they found similar fish in the Mexico, and it's called the totoaba. And this fish is approximately the same size than the vaquita. So when they pull the net, the vaquita gets caught into it, and because they are mammals, they cannot go back up, they die. And this way, in a few years' time, the population was almost wiped out of the map because they were fishing so much. So when I was there, and that was in 2018, the first time, there were only, according to the scientifics, maybe 12 individuals left. We don't know now. I didn't really look into it right now, but I don't know if there still is. We don't know. But anyway, so so Sea Shepherd is there to save the vaquita, That's the, I think that's the official thing, but I think we're also there to save just whatever fish is in the net. And the totoaba is also an endangered species because of the poaching. So basically what we do with this campaign is there is a zone where we patrol, and every time we see a net, we stop and we take the net, we empty it, and then we destroy it. Hmm. So that was...
But at the end, it is illegal as well to fish there, right?
Yeah, it's illegal because of the vaquita, but you know, Mexican authorities, they are very corrupt. So even though you're fishing, you don't even get a fine. We thought when I was there, it's crazy. Mm. It's crazy. Like, they don't even give you a fine. If you're fishing in any other country in the world, you get it, but in Mexico, no. Mm. So yeah, the mission of Sea Shepherd is to take out those nets, illegal nets. And yeah, and sometimes it's very intense because you have a lot of physical work. Mm-hmm. And I remember one day we had 10 or 11 nets, and yeah, it's a lot. And yeah, on the other hand, it's very dangerous because you're basically fighting the Mexican cartels. So yeah, it can be sometimes very, heated. That's the word.
Yeah. For everybody who wants to know more about the vaquita and about the campaign there and about definitely about all the corruption, how it's connected, you can watch the movie Seaspiracy, or you can watch the movie Sea of Shadows. Sea of Shadows is very much about this topic of the vaquita as well, and about the Mexican cartel. So check it out. Sea of Shadows is not on Netflix, but you can check it out online somewhere. And Seaspiracy is on Netflix. So watch this movie. Yeah. Really, you will be impressed.
And if you are French, there is also a French guy who did a reportage on this subject, and it's called Sur le Front. Mm-hmm. And you can find it on TV5. And it's also very interesting.
Yeah. Hey, let's go back shortly. Did you do another campaign with Sea Shepherd? It was the vaquita campaign twice, right?
Yeah, I did the first time in 2018, and then in 2020 I came back, and then the COVID outbreak started worldwide, so we had to stop. Yeah, it was a bit crazy.
Would you like to do another campaign for Sea Shepherd, or what if yes, which would be the topic you want to fight for, which campaign would you like to go for?
There are so many campaigns with Sea Shepherd, but maybe I would do it, maybe not. For now, I'm taking a break from Sea Shepherd. Maybe I would try the French campaign, maybe. They had some French campaign in Brittany.
About the bycatch, the dolphins, right?
Yeah, so maybe this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or I was offered once to go to the one in Africa.
Mm-hmm. Gabon.
Yeah, I think so. So maybe this one would be nice, but I'm not sure yet. There are many other organizations doing some very good job.
But yeah,
it's true that being on the ship and, you know, taking those nets out of the water and freeing the fish, and this is very empowering feeling. Like, you feel like, okay, I'm putting my hands in there. I do something, like, you know, it's very exhilarating. So it's very, as an activist, because I did a lot of street activism, outreach and stuff like this, going on the ship, saving animals, or at least feeling like you're saving
active, them. Right?
I'm not sure. When I look back, I'm not sure we saved them, meaning that we would take them out and just throw them back out in the water. Mm. And the ship is quite high. So I would think maybe it's not so nice to be thrown in the water like that. sorry, I'm laughing.
No, it's not funny, but it's funny. I mean, I get you. I get you.
It's like, when I watched the video, and I love this video where I was on the ship and everything, but when I look at when we throw away the fish, like, go swim. And I'm like, oh my God.
If I would be the fish, it would be crazy. Jesus.
This poor fish is coming from the bottom of the sea. We pull it out, and with the decompression and everything, it's already like super traumatic getting out of the water and then jumping back in. I mean,
They go through a lot of hell, these animals.
Yeah, those poor animals, you just wish they survived this, you know?
Yeah.
Somehow. I mean, it's not our fault. They're there, yeah. Of course.
No, but this with the net is, anyway, I mean, it's like a crazy, crazy problem. We have about 640,000 tons of ghost nets swimming in the ocean. These are nets which are not even used, like lost nets. 640,000 tons, it's like,
it's
insane. I mean, I took out a lot of ghost nets from the ocean from while diving. And the illegal fishing net, there at least someone takes them out and tries to catch something, which is completely still illegal. And even the legal fishing, it's a lot of stuff in the ocean. But the ghost nets, that's just there for nothing as well. I mean, it's all, and the animals are dying inside for nothing. It's like so much death underwater. It's insane.
Yes, maybe that would be something I would like to be implicated and do something about those ghost nets. And
I think as an activist, you want to feel active, right? You want to really see that there, you are able to accomplish something, to do something, to save some lives, to try the best you can with your own hands. I think that's very important to feel
as
an activist. Hey, right now you're not out there on a campaign because you're cooking in a hotel in Austria.
Yeah.
Vegan chef there. And I heard, as you told me last time, I think the hotel in general would be vegetarian vegan. But since you are there as a cook, it's vegan.
When the dish is served, all the dish that we provide is vegan because I cook them and all the cakes and everything. But in the morning, they still have like eggs and cheese and stuff. But otherwise, it's mainly now vegan. Because
how did this work? I mean, how do the people like it? Because the people who are there now eating your vegan food, they have been there before, they got maybe some vegetarian food as well. Do they complain that it's now vegan, or are they happy about it? How is your feeling?
Okay, I will say one thing, and I don't want to sound like I'm bragging, okay? But so the cook who was there before, so there was two cooks before me. There was one cook who was there for one season, the one before me. He was also French, but I don't think he was so interested in the vegan or the vegetarian cooking. He was a like regular chef. From what I gathered. Okay, I'm not gonna say anything. And the one before, I think he was mostly vegetarian, but they all also try to always have mainly vegan also. But they, I think how they did it before is they had two dish, one dish vegetarian and one vegan, so that if you're vegan you can eat. And so the last season there was a lot of people because the summer season just started, so I didn't really see anyone. But winter season, there was a lady and she comes every year, and even twice or three times a year. She came twice in the winter time, so just to let you know. And she said that since the last chef, it was I leveled up the cooking. So I don't think she missed the non-vegan food or the vegetarian food. So when you hear this, and wow, you feel very good. Like, I feel so good. And every day we cook, and the thing is, we have an open kitchen. So we cook and we can see the people, and they can come and talk to us and ask us questions if they have questions. And and every day we started cooking Monday, and every day we got compliments after compliments after compliments. So I don't think they miss it. I didn't hear anyone say, oh, I missed the cheese or something. And even they were surprised because yesterday, I think, not the day before, I made a strawberry cake, you know, with whipped cream and strawberry and sponge cake. And they couldn't believe it was not, it was vegan. They just, and most of the time that's it. Like, I remember in winter, I made spritz, you know, the traditional Austrian thing. Mm-hmm. And they thought I bought them, or they didn't think it was vegan. So I think this shows that if the food is good, people don't even think about this, except if they're really big into meat or something. But if you have a tasty dish and you know with a good balance and nice flavors. I don't think people miss the non-vegan food. And really, I truly believe that.
Yeah, I think you're so right, because I feel as well, if you're eating somewhere outside, for example, if I go to eat somewhere in a vegan restaurant with someone who's not vegan, people most of the time don't believe that it's not everywhere the same, but most of the time people don't believe that this is vegan, because you can make so many good, amazing things without even talking about it to be vegan. And many people don't even realize it would be vegan if it wouldn't be written very big vegan. I think really that people would most of the time not even know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Make an experiment on that. I was thinking, and that's what we two, you and me, we talked before, all of the people which are listening right now, one time we make a podcast, we two together in a kitchen where we will cook some vegan food, where you can explain what you're cooking there. And then we will let people join us and show the list what they have to buy. And then they can cook the same at home with us together. That would be great. Yeah, we will do that.
That would be fun, yeah.
Yeah, we will do that.
Yeah, I think it's about having whatever the food is, it's about, you know, making it very tasty. And if it's tasty and people enjoy themselves while they eat it, then I don't see why vegan or, why you would say, oh, I miss this or something, or you really need to have a big addiction. But I think it's here mostly. The mind,
Hey, what was for you when you changed your cooking style into veganism? What was the hardest thing for you to change when you cooked? Like, for example, many people ask me sometimes, how do you make this without eggs? Or are you not missing the cheese? Or all of these questions, right? What is for you the hardest product to replace in the kitchen? Because sometimes it can be a bit tricky to make your own cheese, for example. It's not always tasting like real cheese. Definitely, it's different. Yeah. What is for you the hardest one to cook it and to convince people that this is amazing food, like that it's maybe even very much similar to the original version of animal product?
It's tough, because when I decided to become vegetarian, I didn't try to replace meat. I just stopped using it. And so I just tried new ways to cook. And I didn't really think, oh, I should try to make it like a meat dish or something like that, because, there was no point for me. And for me, actually, when I became vegetarian, and I started looking at all the food you could make vegan or vegetarian, and I realized you could do so many things, like the aquafaba thing was big, like, wow. And that was in 2014, so... Yeah. And I remember, because at this moment in my life, I was a bit fed up with the cuisine. And, you know, I went through a lot working in kitchens. It's a tough job, really. So when I cooked and I became vegetarian, and it started opening my eyes, the possibilities grew exponentially, and I don't think I tried to replace anything, and even like dairy or cheese especially, because I lived abroad especially in Japan, but also in Australia, and I'm French, so and we have some very good cheese back home. I didn't eat so much cheese, because for me it was not so good, you know, those cheese you found in Australia was like big blocks of plastic like things, you know, so I was not really into eating that.
I know that one.
Yeah, and in Japan, if you wanted cheese, it was so expensive that I rarely I never bought it, because I became stopped eating dairy straight quite rapidly, but I don't know. I don't think I'm answering your question, but I don't think I want to go in that direction to try to convince people making things that look like, of course I would make sometimes things that look like I already make seitan, bourguignon, and I don't know.
But you don't focus on that.
I don't focus because I don't want to. I feel like there is so many things, and the vegan cuisine is at its premises, so it's just starting.
Yeah,
we can do so many. I want to try. I think maybe my I want to leave something behind. Like I try to help to grow this cuisine in a different way than the one that's we tried for centuries. Of course, I like sometimes to do something that looks like meat, or at least doesn't look like meat, but at least you know, if you make champignon with cream and stuff like that. Mm. Vegan cream, of course. Mm. So I would do sometimes things like this, but I don't think it's so big on me. I would prefer to explore different ways now to cook with vegetables and put the vegetables as the star of the plate. You know, this is more what I want to do now. So
Yeah, that's really cool.
So to answer your question, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I was thinking the hardest thing for now is in pastry, is the choux pastry, you know, puff pastry, okay. not puff, the choux pastry, you know, the one, I don't know, it's called, is it puff? No, puff pastry is the one that's...
At a soft cakes?
Choux pastry is it's very common in France. We make, I don't know, Paris-Brest or... Profiterole, you know?
Ah, profiterole, I know, yes.
Yeah, so this pastry, this one is hard to make it vegan. I one of my fellow pastry chef, vegan, she sent me a recipe. I still have to try it. But yeah, so this is why also I don't want to do the same because, yeah, you have limitation. Let's face it, you know, some things are really harder to make. I think vegan souffle, the savory is not possible to do it yet, at least with the from what I read. But yeah, then we do something else and it's fine.
Yeah, then you find another way to do something else. Nice.
Yeah.
Hey, we are going towards the end of the podcast today. We will make another version one day as well with the cooking thing. But I have two more questions for you. How do you see the future? I mean, do you have kind of a positive look on the future, how it will turn out? Because veganism is not only about enjoying good food, but it's about so much more in the end. There are many things why people become vegan. There's so many, so many factors behind why it makes sense to think about a vegan diet. How do you see this all, the vegan movement rolling into the future? How do you see the future in general? Does it, in your eyes, in your opinion, go towards a positive outcome, or is it at the moment a bit hard? How do you feel?
Well, I don't know how I feel. Some days I feel really good about it, and I think, you know, people are really starting to get aware more, and some days I feel really down and I think, okay, there is no hope. There is no hope, but it's hard for me to say, to answer your question, because I think it's so complicated what's happening, and we only grasp a tiny portion of what's happening. I would say, yeah, it would be great if people become vegan, but I don't think it's going to happen. Or we're going to have serious, or it's going to happen through, not a choice from the people, but an obligation, because there is no other choice. So I would say that better start now to do it, so you don't feel frustrated later. And I don't think why you should, because or why you would, because being vegan, it's like awesome for me. I think every day I wake up and I think, okay, I'm making the right choice. And but so, yeah, I think, neither good nor bad. I guess I'm waiting to see with the COVID and everything that happened. That was a bit confusing for everyone. And you kind of hope people would, you know, get aware. And change. But yeah, some days I'm hopeful and some days I look around and I see people and they are not really, you know, so conscious about things. So yeah, I guess the work is going to be to keep working and working towards bringing more consciousness to this. And for me, especially to the, that's, I feel like it's a kind of my mission, to go to see the professional in the kitchen and show them, guys, you have to stop and open. You know?
Don't stop being inside
the box and start thinking outside of the box, and you will see it's freeing and it's so much more creativity. But I think lots of, and especially the old generation of chefs, they learned a certain way, you know, meat in the center, and then you have the veggies as a
very little
a dish
decoration.
So yeah, you have to start thinking differently. But yeah, so I think my personal path, I would say, I think I really want to raise awareness more in the kitchen, because as a vegan, you go to the...
Wait a second. That... We make this last thing again. Tata. Okay, he's gone. Okay, tell me again, because it's quite loud here. I don't live at my home yet. I mean, I move in a van very soon, but right now I'm here in my parents' place because I'm waiting for my van, and it's like always somewhere, something happening.
I'm glad it's not on my side. So yeah, as my personal path, I think it would be to raise more awareness to the professionals, because if we raise awareness to them, these people are cooking for us. And if they cook more vegan food, then it's a first step, I think. And then maybe they would think, oh, it's nice, we like to cook that way. And then they change. It happens sometimes. So yeah.
Yeah.
But nice. As for the, yeah, I'm a very, yeah, fluctuating thing for the future. I hope it's going to be fine, but sometimes I don't know.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, it's a crazy time, and right now nobody really knows what's happening next and what's coming next. So yeah, I think what remains is that we can choose to be hopeful and to create, not just to wait for the hope to happen or to that someone else is doing something, but to be the hope ourselves and really be active. And that's what you do. So thank you so much for that. Hey, my last question, what message do you want to share with the Sounders Planner community, with all the people which are listening today? What is your biggest message you want right now in this moment? What would you like to tell the people who are listening to this podcast today?
Well, I should have prepared that. Just try vegan food, really. Just try it and get curious. Be curious about it and you will see, you won't be disappointed. And I will just say, there will be some failure. Sometimes it doesn't taste good, or you fucked it up. And
yes,
sorry, I said the F word. But it happens. It happens to me also, just so you know. As a chef, it happens to us a lot. So just try. And if it's not good, you will make it better next time. But try and, yeah, open your mind about this. I think that's my message.
Thank you, girl. Thank you for your time and for sharing your experience with vegan cooking, with Sea Shepherd, with activism. And I hope that everyone who listens today or was listening today got a bit of inspiration, I guess, and that you all at home open your mind as well and check it out. Check a little bit out what's behind our food choices, what's connected there, and what it creates in this world, because we have it in our hands to change that. That's not everything in our hands, but a lot of the things are in our hands, and veganism or food choice is definitely one of them. And so open your mind and try it out and enjoy.
Enjoy. Yeah, you will see, you won't regret. I will give you the link to my website where I have some recipes. It's in French, but Google Translate is
good. Great. <Works awesome. laughs> Awesome. Thank you so much, girl. Thank you for your time. We all wish you the very best. Go on with your cooking. And next time we inspire the people by showing you cooking.
Maybe I should say where I'm working at this moment. It's not going to be forever, but at this moment I'm cooking in Austria in a small village in the Leutach Valley. Mm-hmm. It's in Tirol. Mm-hmm. And the name of the hotel is Auf Atmen, which means take a breath or I will give you the link also, so if people are interested to come and try my foods, or if they just want to go and spend a nice holiday here, they should.
Nice. Yeah, thank you. We will put the links all in the show notes and everybody can check it out and be inspired there. So thank you so much for your time and all the best in the meantime, Justine.
Thanks to you for inviting me and well, good luck with Sunless Planets.
Thank you. Bye, bye, girl. Bye. Thank you.